Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 19th, 2024. It has been 3,704 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 28 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 25 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Monday and Tuesday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description, and there are map updates. Today's report starts with errors and omissions. We, along with many other news agencies, reported that Pope Francis had congratulated autocrat Putin on his re-election. This was part of a well-executed Russian disinformation campaign. The Vatican released a statement declaring the reports were untrue. We thank you for your understanding as we cut through the fog of war. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian blogs and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. We start, as we always do, with the daily assessment. There are only small changes from yesterday. If you skip ahead, it won't hurt my feelings. I won't even know. 1. The preordained election of Vladimir Putin has cemented his rule for life as an autocrat, and he will continue to dismantle 70 years of political and social reform from the Soviet and post-Soviet eras. 2. Free Russian Liberation Forces have established operational goals in Belgorod and plan to carry out attacks beyond reconnaissance and force and harassment attacks. 3. Ukraine is systematically targeting Russia's oil refining capability to cause economic harm and degrade Russian mobility. 4. The United States House of Representatives will not advance a bill that will provide additional financial and military aid to Ukraine, unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections. 5. The inability of congressional leaders to agree on additional support for Ukraine is worsening European instability. It will ultimately encourage further acts of aggression by the Putin regime within and beyond Ukraine. 6. Based on statements made by Russian President Vladimir Putin and his proxies and the actions and inactions of Ukraine's allies, the world remains in the early stages of the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 7. Ukraine's air defense capabilities will be in a critical state by April due to a lack of munitions. 8. Russia maintains the initiative theater-wide, but the second phase of the 2024 winter offensive is reaching its culmination point. 9. Ukraine's shift to a Fabian strategy to wear down Russian combat power has been effective. 10. Russia has significantly improved its intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance capabilities, ISR, and fire control, enabling more successful attacks against mobile targets. 11. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 12. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. We begin today's war report in the Donbas, because it's been relatively quiet in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts. Starting in northeast Donetsk oblast, in the Bakhmut area of Operation Oryo, fighting continued in Ivanivske with no change in the situation. In the Klishivka AO, positional fighting continued north and east of Klishivka and east of Andriivka. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces entered an operational pause in the Avdiivka AO, only carrying out 7 attacks. Fighting continued on a line from Berdychi to Semenivka, to Orlivka and to Tonenka. Further south, fighting continued in Porvomayske and on the southern edge of Nevelske, where the situation for Ukrainian forces has somewhat improved, but remains critical. The heaviest fighting continues to be in the Vuhledar AO, where 21 of the 56 Russia-initiated ground attacks were carried out. Fighting continued east and northeast of Krasnohorivka, east of Georgievka, and on the southwestern edge of Pobeda, with no change in the situation. Russia continued its attacks in the eastern part of Novomikhailivka, where the Ukrainian 79th Air Assault Brigade continues to hold its defensive lines. Russian troops probed Ukrainian defenses west of Solotke, attempting to advance in the direction of Vodene. In the Staromlinivka AO, Russian and Ukrainian sources reported fighting in the areas of Staromayorske and Orozhayne, with no change in the situation. In Zaporizhia Oblast, the Mirne mystery from yesterday has been solved. Russian mercenary blogger Wogonzo clarified that the Mirne reported as captured is southwest of Hulaypole. We have had the settlement under Russian control since March 2023, and neither combatant claimed there was a change in territorial control in the last year. Control of the village does not provide a tactical advantage for either combatant. In the Orikhiv AO, fighting continued west and southwest of Verbove and west and south of Robotyne. Russian forces did make marginal gains southwest of Verbove, but within the current grey area on the war map. Fighting between pro-Putin and Free Russian forces continued along the border of Ukraine. In the Sumy Oblast of Ukraine, pro-Putin Russian forces conducted 83 fire missions targeting 46 settlements, using artillery rounds, mortars, Grad rockets, one-way drones, missiles and bombs. Speaking on Marathon, Sumy Oblast military and administrative regional governor Volodymyr Artyukh said that 285 people, including 26 children, had been evacuated from Velika Pisarivka. Within the residential exclusion zone, a 5-kilometer-wide strip on the border of Russia, evacuations are carried out by the Ukrainian military. Artyukh called for calm, saying, quote, "One should not panic and spread hostile rumors that the Sumy region is allegedly left without protection." Unquote. The mayor of Velika Pisarivka, Lyudmila Birukova, said that some residents in the exclusion zone were self-evacuating, walking as far as 12 kilometers to reach safe areas. In July 2023, over 10,000 people were ordered to evacuate from settlements near the Russian border. Those who declined had to sign waivers of personal responsibility. It is estimated that up to 1,500 people remain in the border regions, but due to the attacks and communication interruptions, it is unclear. If you have family or loved ones living in the Sumy region near the Russian border, we urge them to follow official instructions and evacuate as soon as it is safe or when it is offered. In our assessment, the fighting between Russians will be sustained. Konotop was bombed for the second day in a row, damaging the communal heating network and wounding 2 people. Evgenia Chirikova, an activist who fled Russia and now lives in Estonia, called for Russians to join the fight against the Putin regime. Quote, "I'd like to say that I've been recognized as a terrorist by Putin's regime for my anti-war activity. I'm proud of this status. Finally, we have the opportunity to join the Russian Volunteer Battalions, the Siberian Battalion, Freedom of Russia Legion, and the Russian Volunteer Corps. We have the opportunity, and I hope we'll use this historic chance to form our own rebellious anti-Putin army, which will help liberate Ukrainian territories from Putin's invaders and later will liberate Russian territory from Putin's KGB occupants." Unquote. Chirikova is the highest-profile known member of the Russian partisans fighting pro-Putin forces to call for rebellion. On March the 18th, Russian autocrat Vladimir Putin admitted that the forces fighting in Kursk and Belgorod were Russian partisans and called for their executions if captured on the battlefield. During a victory speech after the sham elections, Putin referred to the attackers as, quote, four groups of traitors, referencing the Freedom of Russia Legion, the Russian Volunteer Corps, the Siberian Battalion, and the Ichkerian Volunteers. Putin also provided a still ridiculous but much lower casualty number than the Ministry of Defense. Last week, Minister of Defense Shoigu claimed over 1,500 Ukrainian forces had been killed, while Putin reported the number was 800. There is no evidence to support that many Russian partisans have been killed, and as a policy, we don't report on casualty numbers we can't independently verify. Moving to assessment. The shifting talking points indicate that the Kremlin is struggling to contain reports about the expanding attacks. Fear, frustration, and anger are growing along the border, particularly in Belgorod. Hospitals are filling up with wounded soldiers, conscripts, and members of the Territorial Guard and the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Officially, Russia's position, even within Belgorod, is there are no mandatory evacuations and Free Russia Liberation Forces have not crossed the border. These claims are becoming impossible to continue as Russian troops fall back, shelling intensifies, and the number of residents fleeing grows. As for battlefield executions, it is well documented Russia is using blocking troops to execute their own soldiers, as well as Ukrainian prisoners of war. Russian propagandists and mail bloggers will likely struggle with the new talking points of the attacks being led by Russian partisans and not Ukrainian little green men backed by NATO mercenaries. Here is what we could verify in Bryansk, Kursk, and Belgorod. Starting in the Kursk region, Free Russia Liberation Forces continued to set conditions in Tyotkina for future ground attacks by conducting shelling of pro-Putin forces. In the center of the village, our analysts geolocated a small arms ammunition depot that was destroyed, causing secondary explosions. We link to the video in our daily sit-rep, and there is more information in the podcast description. In the Belgorod region, Russian forces have withdrawn from Kozinka. A geolocated video recorded by a local resident showed heavy damage near the center of the settlement, and they barely escaped being hit by a mortar round. It is unclear which Russian faction fired on them. We adjusted the map, moving the line of conflict north of the village and expanding the gray area. Despite claims from pro-Putin leaders, Free Russia Liberation Forces supported by Ichkeria volunteers have established full control of Gorkovsky, including the village administrative building. At the time of recording, there was no evidence that their occupation was contested. In Krasnaya Yaruga, a pro-Putin R-330Z Zhitel mobile electronic warfare station was destroyed by Free Russian forces. The Freedom of Russia Legion once again called for residents to evacuate the city of Belgorod. Quote, "We urge city residents to immediately leave Belgorod or find reliable shelter due to the threat of rocket and artillery fire. We strike at military targets, but due to the placement of enemy military facilities in the residential sector, civilians may suffer. We ask Belgorod residents to evacuate urgently." Unquote. The city has entered the seventh day of shelling, which remains almost continuous. Russian officials claimed the city was hit by 9 Grad rockets, with officials sharing 4 pictures showing the debris from the first stage of Panzer S-1 anti-aircraft rockets. What? You were expecting me to tell you there were pictures of Grad rockets debris? Russian propagandists circulated videos showing 2 women hiding in an open concrete shelter during a missile attack. A resident traveled to the center of the city on the morning of March the 18th, stating that there were 4 to 5 air raid alerts a day. Everything was closed and the city was empty. In the video, he showed an impact crater from a mortar strike on Soborная Square. Our analysts were able to geolocate the video and determine the mortar traveled south to north. The splash pattern was consistent with a barrel-fired mortar that traveled on an arc versus a drone-delivered IED. Missile or drone debris struck the Energomash plant in Belgorod, breaking through the roof. There continues to be very little information about Shebekina, where fighting close to the Ukrainian border continues.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Here is my theater-wide update. On March the 17th and the 18th, Ukrainian air defense shot down 17 of 22 Shahed 136 one-way drones. According to Ukrainian military analyst Oleksandr Kovalenko, Russia used 331 Sheheds in March, with 269 shot down. If Russia maintains an average of 18 drones a day, they'll use around 500 this month. That's a significant jump from the last 2 months, but still within the range of an average production rate of 375 to 400 Sheheds a month. The Spanish newspaper El País reported that soldiers from NATO nations are already in Ukraine to conduct arms control intelligence operations and training. None of the reports in the international media have exposed a previously unknown level of involvement of non-Ukrainian soldiers operating within Ukraine. The European Union has agreed to provide a military aid package to Ukraine worth $5.4 billion. The money is meant to provide direct aid to Ukraine and not as development funds for the European nations, and can be spent outside of the EU. Wait, does that mean the funds exist to purchase the 1.5 million artillery shells the Czech Republic secured? On paper, yes, but no one has indicated that the funds will be used for the ammunition initiative. United States Senator Lindsey Graham was in Kyiv to meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky and other officials. There were internal reports that the meeting was strained at times, with Graham opening the meeting by talking about the situation in the Middle East for 10 minutes. The senator was pitching the idea of future military aid to Ukraine in the form of an interest-free loan, and implying it was the best path forward. Graham called for Ukraine to start mobilizing citizens under 27 years old, showing he does not understand the national demographics. There was a sharp decline in the birth rate after the collapse of the Soviet Union, as in many former Soviet countries, including Russia. Kyiv wants to preserve those under 27 as long as possible, so they don't make the demographic crisis even worse. During a joint press conference, the senator said he would request President Joe Biden to declare Russia a state sponsor of terrorism. While the White House can direct the cabinet to take action, the decision resides with the U.S. Department of State under the direction of the president. Ukrainian journalist Roman Shraik was less generous, pointing out that Graham voted against the Senate bill to provide military aid to Ukraine, declaring that the situation on the U.S. border is a larger priority. Quote, "The readers will again believe all the nonsense he told and think what a wonderful uncle he is. Context is important." Unquote. The president of Romania, Klaus Iohannis, has agreed to allow the transit of certain weapons through Romania and the training of Ukrainian pilots at the European F-16 training center at Fetești military air base. The training was originally planned to start in June 2023. The first 50 Ukrainian pilots and technicians will start training soon. The military equipment that will move through Romania includes CB-90-class fast assault boats purchased by Finland. The 16-meter-long vessels have similar capabilities to the Russian Raptor-class patrol boats, with a top speed of 70 km per hour. 10 were ordered for Ukraine and will be delivered in 2024. Belgium announced a $448 million military aid package to Ukraine, which includes an Alkmaar-class minesweeper. The M923 was commissioned in 1991 and is still in service with the Belgian Navy. The Polish and German defense ministers announced that on March the 26th, the two nations would co-lead an armor capability coalition to support Ukraine. It is unclear how this is different from the late 2022 tank coalition or what the mission will be. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius stressed the importance of being prepared for any future military confrontation. Quote, "Nobody really knows whether or when Russia will attack Europe. But what we really see is that it is able and willing to attack Ukraine and is doing it now for more than 2 years. So what we have to learn together as allies in Europe is to be prepared for any threat, especially for a threat that comes from Putin's Russia." Unquote. There was no progress on either discharge petition, as Congress was not in session. We want to give a quick shout-out to the administrator of the Oryx database, Jakub, who has been sick. Get better soon. Let's go to the land of Mobix, Mobilization and Mir. The German Foreign Ministry announced their country would not call Putin president and would only use his name. While multiple governments condemned the fake elections in Russia, as of now, no governing body has announced they will call Putin an illegitimate leader. We have made the editorial decision to refer to Putin as an autocrat. The Atlantic reported that Russia is buying satellite data from US companies and then using that information to choose targets and for battle damage assessment. While this has sent shockwaves across the information space, this was established as fact in 2022. Satellite imagery has significant limitations, including weather, or as we like to call them, tactical operational security clouds. It also ignores that Russia has 4 operational spy satellites. In our assessment, the imagery enhances their ISR capabilities, but does not provide a new strategic advantage. In 2023, a record number of men with disabilities registered with the Russian government, according to an analysis of public records by the news agency Verstka. In 2023, the number of men aged 31 to 59 registered as disabled jumped from 1.67 million to 2.17 million. According to the clinical study Epidemiology of Disability of Adult Population in the Russian Federation, the average number of adults of the same age group who became disabled from 2005 to 2016 was 263,000 per year. In 2023, the number almost doubled, to do the math. An extra 237,000 people became disabled. We can't say that all 237,000 were Russian soldiers, but a significant number almost certainly are. South Korean officials believe that another 300 shipping containers of ammunition from North Korea were delivered to Russia. This brings the total to 7,000 since the summer of 2023, but suggests that deliveries are slowing. Russian Colonel Vadim Slusar was killed in action in Ukraine on February 20, 2024. Now that Putin has become an autocrat, we expect his purge to accelerate even faster. On March 17, Russia conducted sweeping arrests in 16 cities, bringing 74 people into custody. Some were arrested on charges related to election interference, while the details of others were not released. Last week, we reported there were mass arrests of artists, actors, and musicians right before the start of the fake election. Searches and arrests have continued, including Naila Alaverdieva, director of the Perm Museum of Contemporary Art. On March 12, former Alexei Navalny's aide Leonid Volkov was attacked at his home in Lithuania. Volkov is listed as a foreign agent by Moscow and was beaten with a hammer and sprayed with tear gas. Lithuanian officials said the attack was, quote, Kremlin-motivated and is investigating the incident as terrorism. A criminal case has been opened against journalist Mikhail Zagar for violating Russia's so-called Don't Say War laws. The charges were filed due to a June 2022 post on VK, Russia's Facebook clone, sharing information about the Bucha massacre. Zagar has been charged with spreading deliberately false information and faces up to 10 years in prison. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history, and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.